I've never seen a diamond in the flesh. I cut my teeth on wedding rings.
Dude, that's pretty cool.
Man, that is a,
I'm
just sad.
Dude, that's pretty good.
This is The Gloom, bringing you weekly interviews with F3 Omaha Packs, exploring their F3 experiences and finding those sticky elements that create the glue in the gloom.
Shout out to our sponsors. Major Team Mortgage, Omaha Laser Dentistry, Exclusively Eye Care, Liberty Core Real Estate, Avier Wealth Management, and Apex Men's Clinic. We appreciate their support.
Yo, Gloom listeners, it's The Plague, and today I'm talking about getting your finances as fit as your physique. Our very own F3 Omaha brother, Jean-Claude, aka Michael Pfluger at Avior Wealth Management, specializes in building personalized financial plans. He understands the journey you walk in life as a man of faith, safeguarding your family and creating a legacy. Jean-Claude is ready to help you plan your finances with intention so that you can live with purpose. And that's just the beginning when you work with the Avior Wealth team. Visit avior.com/F3. That's AVIOR.com/F3. And see how Michael can guide your financial journey today.
Now let's get back to the gloom.
And we're back, man. I'm excited. This guy, it's been really cool just to get to know this guy. I often use this guy's story a little bit anytime I'm complaining about my three children, to just remind myself and my wife that there are people with more than three kids out there.
Three is plenty, man. Three is hard. When you hit three, that's hard.
I've also really been inspired just by this guy's faith, his passion for sharing his faith journey and leading other men. And recently a site queue at the battlefield, got our man Splinter Cell on the call. And Splinter, why don't you just take us back to the start, that first workout? I think I remember was at maybe Paradise, but who EH'd you? And then talk us through that naming story.
First, I appreciate it, man. It's humbling to be asked to be on here. There's a lot of very special guys that have come before me. So I appreciate you reaching out. But yeah, that first time was paradise for me. And I got invited out by, it would have been White Claw back in the day. And I think that it was 2019, 2020. I think it was 2019. So it's been a few years. But I had started my fitness journey a couple of years prior to that, after having, I think we had probably four kids at that time. I had gone from, the old, I can eat anything I want to about four kids in, realizing, hey, this doesn't work the same way that it used to work for me. So put on some extra pounds and started running quite a bit. And after kind of getting back in shape with running, one of my buddies, Justin Rediger, White Claw, invited me out, took a couple of times to EH me to get me out there, but I ended up showing up. Was it Lucky Charms was on the queue.
Wow. Okay.
So it was back in the day, and he had the idea that you guys were going to do tons or something like that. So we were stopping at like random different places over there in Regency and doing Merkins and air squats. And, I thought I was pretty tough. And then I don't think that I was able to get past, five Merkins. And I was like, I'm dying. And by the time we were leaving, my legs were jello and it's hard to walk that afternoon. And I asked if that was normal. And he said, probably first few times. So.
I love it. And talk us through. So you get in the circle at the end and we start trying to come up with names. How did that go?
It went really great. As you can imagine, we had a bunch of guys out there and I worked for a lumber company. So I worked for Chicago Lumber. And, you put that together with the fact they found out that I had eight kids. I didn't have eight at that point. I think that we were on number six, and they just, you name it to do with anything that you can with wood and children and you put it all together. And somebody threw out Morningwood, and they decided that they were going to name me Morningwood, and everybody was laughing and having a great old time. And I was like, these guys are kind of weird. Yeah. If I'm honest, it was kind of a weird one. But, we all had fun with it. We went to coffee afterwards. And then I got a phone call later on that day. Lucky Charms called me. And he's like, hey, man, if you're okay with it, we're going to change your name. It's like, all right, what do you mean? It's like, honestly, we had a conversation when we walked away from it. We didn't think that it'd be great to yell morning wood when we see you in church. I was yeah. like, yeah, I, all right, I can get it. So then they came the name Splinter Cell.
Okay.
I'm just kind of my little poke the bear. I just shortened it to Splinter, and everybody kind of chimes in at the end to finish it out for me. But yeah. I like poking the bear a little bit. So you don't get to shorten your name. So I try to every time that I say it. We do.
I do remember that morning, and then it was sort of like, yeah, I don't know if he's gonna go home and tell his wife that name, or if he'll even come back. Right. That's yeah. sort of the only other one I remember was a guy we named Sugar Daddy, and his yeah. wife didn't like that either, and so I think we changed it. But I don't know that he's been back. But well, so how did you know White Claw? Is he a guy just neighborhood or church?
Or church. Yeah.
Okay.
Through church, him and Shackles originally were the ones that were going out. So went out to Paradise, and then I started doing the District Murph quite a bit. So meeting those guys out there, and then Greek Freak was a good buddy of mine. Our kids went to school together. Yeah, pretty close with a lot of those original guys that were out there, maybe not the, you know, the originals, but some of the first 100 guys that were out there, pretty good connections through church with some of those guys, and just some, you know, continual EH and got me out, and I enjoyed the fellowship part of it. And so it was great.
Yeah. You know, so Paradise, right, is a running AO. Where did you, do you remember your second post? Did you kind of stick with some of the,
the right. second one was the District, so I did a Murph after that, and
how'd that found go?
Out the yeah Jello Legs after that one too, man. I yeah. mean, I had done the running thing, but getting the whole workout in, it's a little bit different animal. So I think a lot of guys, I mean, I didn't have a problem with the stamina to do it. It was just the actual like physical, all right, like push through, get through the workout, and then afterwards, I'm like, man, like my legs, they cannot take this. I don't know what it is, but. So
chasing all those kids around, probably what's the as you think about, you know, so that's, you know, almost 6 years ago, have you made progress on some of your fitness goals? Are you feeling better, or how have you navigated that? Have you had to make some diet changes too along the way, or what's that been like?
To be honest with you, I mean, I could pull a little bit of this story when we were doing the flag pass at the battlefield a little while back. I think that, you know, guys, they go through stages when it comes to their F3 journey itself. I went in and I was like, hey, this is a group that that I really enjoy. If you know me very well, I'm one of those guys that I kind of hang in the background. I'm not a guy that likes to be the center of attention. I like to be, I guess if you look at business wise, I like to be in charge, but I like to have other people that like to do the spotlight stuff, that like to do the sales side. I'm not your, you know, go meet with customers. They stick me back in the corner. They let me run things, and they keep me from offending people. So, but it's just the reality that I did that. I came in there. I really enjoyed the guys that were, you know, asking me to come along, me tag along with them, and developed some good friendships there. And through that, I met some guys that are really into fitness like yourself. And I was like, hey, that's pretty cool. You know, I want to see how far I can push this. So we went from, you know, just doing the running thing to actually doing a lot of the Murph stuff, learning that pull-ups are really hard.
Yeah.
And then getting pretty decent at being able to do the pull-ups, being able to do the double Murph, and then started running with a weighted vest and doing all that stuff and getting really crazy with it, and found out that leads to injuries. So if you're not very smart with how you're doing that, you push a little bit too far. But yeah, no, I just really enjoyed pushing myself farther than I ever had. I'd never been in that that type of shape before, where it's, you know, all around. You know, focused on individual parts of fitness before, but never like the whole body. So that was really interesting, really new for me. It was really fun to be in shape like that. But as you like, there's ebbs and flows to it. And we had a couple more kids. So, you know, I took my time off when the new kid came along, and it was interesting because then you realize how quick it goes away. You either focus on it and you keep doing it, and or it goes away pretty quick. So I'd have to work my way back, and, you know, change some diet stuff along the way. But for the most part, I think I had made the eating change before I joined F3. So I was heavy on the sweets and the sodas and all that stuff before joining F3. About a year or two prior to joining, I had tried to cut a lot of that stuff out just to lose weight and make a little bit different choices and stuff like that. So, yeah. But then I hit the season of like, hey, we moved from, you know, the Omaha area out to Blair, and it was a 30-minute drive in for anything I wanted to do. And when you're leaving at 4:30 in the morning, and all of a sudden you got to leave at 4 in order to hit the free runs and stuff, that extra half hour is really hard on me. So it's just, you know, dialed it back a little bit and cut it down probably 2 times a week. Hit the battlefield and the Coliseum. So that general spot was on the way to work for me and kept on doing that. And then, yeah, I went through a season where my wife ended up getting sick and spent a significant amount of time in the hospital. During that time, I didn't post at all. And I've just been the last probably 3-4 months trying to just work my way back from that. I hit that season where I put a bunch of weight back on and did the old pogo stick and the up and down, and so we're trying to get some of that stuff back under control right now. But yeah. I mean, that's a little bit of my fitness journey. Now I'm trying to get my running legs back. And
I remember, I don't know if you remember this, but I had done at one point, like, how many burpees can I do in 30 minutes, right? And I videoed it, and then I get a text from you and you're like, hey, I'm gonna see how many blockies I can do.
Yeah, if we're gonna do this, let's be crazy about it, man.
Yeah, how many did you end up doing?
I have no idea. It was something stupid. We did like 200 or 212 or something, and yeah. I could never keep up with your burpee number, but I at least tried. So
well, and then yeah, and I also remember you did a queue at, it was Battlefield or Coliseum, with cowbells and burpees, and it was like every time the cowbell went off. I mean, so you had some pretty creative things. I like a guy that likes burpees, right? There aren't too many.
Right? There are not. I think that I heard from you of like, why don't you like them? Most people don't like them because they're hard. Right. But, you know, might as well get to like them. If we can do hard things together, we should do these and enjoy it.
Yeah, fall down, get back up. What? Right. You know, I love kind of what you're describing about the seasons, because I think it's spot on. Like, I went, you know, with our last kid, and you know, we've only got three, but getting back into the rhythm of running and posting, and you know, it's just like, as life happens, then those things change, and you've got to kind of adjust. So I think you're spot on with just how things go. What has been, you know, as you think about like continuing to get drawn back to F3, has it been the guys, the fellowship? Like, what has kept that sort of as a staple in your kind of fitness?
I think we talk about it a lot in F3, but it's the fellowship factor. It's the reality that having guys that you're meeting up with on a consistent basis, that's been one of the things that's just kept me coming back. A lot of times we went through this this health ordeal with my wife, and I would just say, hey, like, this is hard, but I'm still gonna get up and go. And she would just say, you know, like, you need your rest too at some point. And I was like, I know that I need my rest, but reality is, like, I need to get out there as well. Like, I need to get out there, I need to have that fellowship, I need to have guys asking me questions, I need to you know, I need to be able to talk about what's going on. And half of this is a physical thing, and the other half is just, it's mental. It's almost like a mental medication. You know, it's one of those things, you get out there and you get to talk to guys. Guys are asking you questions. They're pouring into you, and you get the opportunity to pour back into them at some point. But it's just, that's what's kept me coming about. It's just the reality that I really love the fellowship aspect. I'm, like I said, I'm one of those guys, I do not have like the plethora of friends. I like to have a couple of really close friends, and I don't know if it's, I feel like I don't have the energy or what it is, but I don't like just going out and trying to make a bunch of friends or talk to a bunch of people. Like, it's just not in my wheelhouse. I like to have those guys that I can meet with on a consistent basis that I know are going to ask me deep, meaningful questions that are going to keep me engaged, and that we can continue to sharpen one another. You know, it's a big part of my story too, is just faith. And what does it look like to be a follower of Jesus? I think one of those things is just having true male relationships that, you know, guys ask you the right questions. And specifically, I remember doing a MRF one day at district and was running with Tater Tot, and we were talking through something that happened the weekend prior with my wife. And I just said, you know, things aren't, we're not seeing eye to eye on this. Like, I do not agree with what she's saying. I remember what the actual situation was. I just said, like, we're at odds, and like, I'm just, this is one of those things, like, I don't feel like I want to budge on. And so we go through that. We're talking through some of the stuff, and kid you not, like, at the end of the run, he's like, all right, so what are you going to do to make that right? I was like, what kind of a question is that? You know, that's not why I'm talking to you right now. Yeah. But, you know, just having those guys that ask you the questions that are going to challenge you. And that's the thing that just keeps me coming back. That's, I mean, the fitness is a good part of it, but just the relationship aspect, I think, is one of the really, one of the key, like, things that draws people and keeps people in at F3.
Yeah, I love that. And that's such a great example, right? Because it just is like that guy that's, instead of agreeing or taking your side, or is going to, like, give you that nudge to, like, okay, you got to be a leader. You got to be, you know, a good husband in this situation. And so how are you going to do that? I love that example. How did you get to that point? Just thinking about, like, you know, you got this weird group of guys that tried to name you Morningwood. And then you get to this point where you've got these, like, really key relationships. What do you think? Was there anything that you remember intentionally that you did to kind of make those relationships solid like that, or just happen naturally?
So I think it's a little bit of both. I think a lot of it has to do with, if you notice, a lot of relationships within your life have to do with presence. You know, we talk about faith, a lot of it to do with your community is your presence in your community. So are you showing up? You're showing up, and, like, there's just that natural thing that happens with the growth and friendship. And I think the reality is that my presence in the beginning was just, like, I just wanted to be there. I wanted to be a part of it. But then also the dynamic of the personalities that were involved in the beginning were the type of guys that were like, hey, come with me, let's go do this. Or, hey, show up here, this is where we're going tomorrow. Or, hey, do you want to do a smurf? And I'm like, what the heck is a smurf? Why would I want to do a smurf? And so they're just asking you questions, continuing to try to engage you. But some of my deepest, you know, male relationships are with guys that have just said, hey, you know, let's go do this. Like, come on, like, just let's go do this. And, or, you know, we're going to be here at this point. And they just keep on inviting. They keep on asking me to come along. They keep on engaging. Because, like I said, I'm not that guy that wants to go out and just show up randomly somewhere, not know anybody. But continuing to get text messages from guys of, hey, how you doing? Where you at? Yeah, you know, where are you going to be posting? I think that's probably one of the harder things too, relationship wise, is the guys that end up moving away, like Greek Freak. And that was really hard. You know, he was one of the guys that we were texting, you know, at least 2-3 times a week saying, hey, where are you going to show up? Where are you going to be at? Just doing life together.
Yeah.
You know, and just the reality that the guys that seem like they really want to do life with you, like, it just, your relationship grows. You're able to ask deeper questions. That presence allows for, like, the continuing of a conversation that ended the previous day. You know, you just pick right back up and you're planning your schedule. You may not be going to the same AO every day of the week, but you're planning which AO you're going based upon, you know, hey, where's your buddy going? And I think those are the things that really helped those relationships thrive, was having that core group or your shield lock, whatever you want to call it, that you're showing up and you're doing life with on a daily basis or a weekly basis or whatever it is. So,
Have you, moving out to Blair, because I've had a similar experience, right? Like, my previous shield lock was all guys that live kind of midtown, and I just am not in proximity anymore to some of those guys. But do you feel like you found any of those new relationships in Blair, or we need to start an AO at the...
We might have to end up with an AO out there, but no, I haven't really formed a whole lot of those relationships. See, we're like... You're kind of set up a little bit like we are, where you have neighbors, but you're far enough away that if you don't want to engage, like, nobody's ever going to bother us. Like, we are right on the edge of a neighborhood that's got hundreds of homes, but I mean, you got to be kind of brave, and you got to make the quarter mile trek up the drive to get to, you know. So it's just one of those things of we just don't. We moved out there to kind of get away from and slow down a little bit, and I think it slowed us down more than we anticipated it was going to. So now we have to be really intentional about relationships and all that type of stuff, which my wife is a lot better at than I am. She's got the personality that she really loves to connect with people and to have those types of relationships. I'm the guy that's like, just put me out in the woods and leave me alone.
Right. Yeah. So. Hence moving out to the woods, right?
It's been really tough on the relationship side, moving out there. But we're slowly gaining some traction on that and getting some like-minded people.
What, you know, one of the other things kind of in this like fellowship, you know, category, we look at like the concentrica, right? So the relationship with your M or your wife and then your 2.0s. Have you seen, since you started with F3, have you seen any impact on those key relationships? Like, have you brought your kids out to work out at all? I'd be curious if you've done that.
Yet. Brought the older three out and they loved it. I mean, they keep on asking me, you know, when can we go back? I did that, what was that, Thanksgiving? I brought those, the older three out, and it was funny, man. They jump right in. They're a hoot. So it was a lot of fun having them out there, and they were just keeping up with everybody. At the time, they were, I had an 11, a 13, and a 14-year-old out there, and they're just hanging with the guys. And, you know, we had Black Lung and Tight Lip were out there at the same time, and they were rolling with those guys, just having fun. And, you know, they were all talking to them. And I just think that there's an impact on some of that stuff of they see guys and that relationship. And then we went out to coffee afterwards, and they got to go out to coffee with the guys and see what that's like. And we're just all sitting around the table at Thanksgiving, and, you know, right after a beatdown, 6 o'clock, 6:15 in the morning, there's a bunch of dudes out there just talking it up. Hey, what's going on? And so that's been really fun. And then it's also, it's put kind of a little bit of competition in the house, like when it comes to like the burpee challenge in January. Multiple kids will go and be like, hey dad, how many burpees you get today, you know? And be like, well, I got my 100 in. And they're like, well, I did 200, or I did 150. Or so there's always this big competition that's going on in our house now when it comes to that type of stuff. And then with the M, I mean, I think that she sees the relationship aspect of when I'm out at F3, I definitely, it's a boost for my mood because I'm having the conversations that I need to be having outside of just her and I. Mm-hmm. Yep. I think that you can get definitely isolated when it comes to some of that stuff. And you just need to have those male relationships where you have the conversations that need to be had. And I think that she's seen the benefit of some of that too, with me trying to work through some of my stuff. And, you know, what does it look like to have somebody speaking into that? And so I definitely think there's been an impact on some of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's super cool. And I, you know, recently Snare has been bringing out two of his boys to these, they're on spring break. So they've posted every day this week, and they're like, I don't know, maybe 12 and 8 or something. And the one, I'm like, why do you keep coming out? And he's like, well, I want a 6-pack. You know, that's the 12-year-old boy, right? And
they just want a 14-year-old. It's like, he's, hey, dad, I got an 8-pack now. And I'm like, yeah, that's not me. Like, I'm glad that you can get there. Dad ain't going to do that.
Oh, that's so funny. That remind me, how many? So you have 8 kids, all boys?
Yep. All boys.
And they're what, like oldest to youngest? What are the ages?
Oh, now you're going to test me. Remember? Yeah, I don't know. I have my 14-year-old is going to be 15 in May. So I've got right now, I've got a 14-year-old, a 13-year-old, a 12-year-old. I've got 10, 9, 7, 6. And 4.
Okay. So in a couple of years, in a couple of years that you just you and your boys, we could start an AO out there.
Right. They would love it, man. They went running with me the other weekend. So they're trying to get their running legs as well. And
we're getting closer. Yeah. We'll have a Blair site one of these days for sure.
I mean, it keeps on moving north. So
Yeah, that's where I'm at. Well, I love hearing that. It's just so cool. You know, having girls, right? I'm like, I see these guys out there with their boys. I'm like, that's got to be a really cool experience. Yeah, my two brothers don't live here, so I haven't gotten them out. But what, you know, some of this too, I think your wife has been through some health stuff, right? And I think you have been vulnerable in sharing that with the guys and asking for help, right? So many of us, like, we just struggle with asking for help. But I don't know if you would be willing to share. You don't have to give a ton of details, but just what's your experience been like as you've been going through that?
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that's not in my nature. I am not a ask for help kind of guy. I'm a, hey, things are hard. Like, you just need to put your head down. Like, we're going to get through it. We're going to work through it. The reality is we hit a point where, yeah, my wife was in the hospital for beginning of last year for 2.5 months. And then she got to come home for, I think it was 5 or 6 weeks, ended up back in the ER and was in the hospital for another month. And then she got to come home on a wound bag and went to the wound care clinic to do the hyperbaric oxygen chamber treatment or whatever. And so she did 60 sessions in the tube. So she was heading out to Fremont every day. And there was a point in there at the beginning where I was like, you know what? Like, we got this. Like, it's scary. It's all of those things. And it was touch and go. But I was just looking back on it, you know, I was naive and I didn't really know what was going on. I don't work in the medical field. So I was just making a lot of assumptions. Reality is that hindsight being 2020, like, those scary time. We had no idea. She was coming home. She spent eight days in the ICU. They, long story short, they thought that they were fighting an infection. Turned out to be an autoimmune disease that was kicking up. And so, very, very smart doctor. We owe Laura's life to him. And I said, hey, we need to take a chance on this and treat with steroid. And he said, one of two things is going to happen. Either it's going to make her worse and can't get much worse than she already is, or it's going to turn things around. And ended up, she next day made a turn, her fever went away, and she got released from the ICU a couple of days after that. But it was kind of one of those things. Hey, this is either going to kill her or it's going to save her. And wow, we got the lucky side of that. But like, it was a couple of days after that happened that I realized, like, hey, I don't have this. Like, I'm a performer to, we can do what we need to do. If you need me to work, I'm going to work and I'm going to put my head down. But, people started stepping in and saying, hey, can I take over making a schedule of having people out to the house to watch the boys or to do whatever, meals and all that type of stuff. It was really a humbling process to have to admit that I needed help because I couldn't do it by myself. So people that just stepped up, that provided a meal or that mailed us gift cards for meals, or I mean, she had a group of gals that she knew that came out and planted our garden for us because I couldn't get around to it. Tater Tot and probably had a couple dozen guys from F3 came out over one weekend and helped Nugget's farm. Like, we call it the farm, but in reality is, like, we just got a big old patch of woods that trees come down and we got fields to mow, and it's a lot of work. And I got 8 kids, but you're not able to keep up with it every week. Like, it just piles up. They came out and they spent better part of a day out there with me, and we're just getting stuff back in order and back to a point where I could actually start to keep up with it. And I mean, you name it, people were helping out with our kids. We homeschool our kids. So helping out, we were doing a co-op deal with PCA. So they were still going to campus a couple of days a week and getting them dropped off or picked up. For having the home days where I had to be at work, people were there helping teach the kids and doing what we needed to do. And just the community between F3 and church and TCA was, yeah, it was humbling. I mean, we've been using a phrase through this of, like, it was amazing to see the little C church, mm-hmm, be the big C church. You know, it's just like the the little communities came together to show us what like the bigger, broader church is supposed to be about, caring for people. Mm-hmm. So that's that so experience cool. was amazing.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that. And just, I'm so thankful that it went the way that it did. You know, I can't imagine those moments of uncertainty where you're just, you know, I don't have this under control, and we don't know what's going on. I would be curious, you know, I know you're a man of faith. I would be curious. I mean, how did your faith help you through that? Or what did that look like?
You know, there was a point where I kept on saying, like, hey, it's like, God's going to bring us through this. And I think the hardest for me to realize and be honest with myself and with everybody else was the reality that God's got us, but his way of walking us through something doesn't mean the way that we want it to turn out.
Right.
And that for me was hard to accept, if I'm honest. Like, there was just this belief of like, things are going to be okay. Like, God's going to provide, he's going to do. Never did it cross my mind that him providing for us may mean that I'm a single dad taking care of 8 kids because my wife passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Never did it mean that my wife's going to be fighting a lifelong autoimmune disease that she's got days where, you know, she struggles to get out of bed in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And if she's able to, then, you know, we've got to manage pain throughout the day. And she's got other days where we're able to manage the pain and she can do some normal things, but nothing compared to what we were used to. So just this reality of like, faith has brought us through, and we only made it as far as we have because of his strength and not our own. So there's just been an aspect of having to grow, and what does reliance upon God look like when it's not what we envision?
For sure.
I don't know if that makes sense or if I'm articulating that well, but there's just this reality. Like, I just had this false impression of like, hey, I'm a believer. Things have, you know, they've gone pretty well. We've had a pretty fairly uneventful, in a good way, life where our needs have been taken care of and God's always provided. And, you know, when things are tough, it seems like he's always provided a way through that. But to sit down at 40 degrees and or 40 years old and have the discussion like, hey, if I go on the vent, what are you going to do? I'm driving home from that conversation saying, That's not what I signed up for. We didn't, like, I'm 40. We're not supposed to be having this conversation right now.
Right. Yeah, no, I think you're articulating it very well. I mean, I think there is sort of this, you know, maybe false, I don't know, message out there, right? That if, you know, put your faith and hope in Jesus and then your life will be easy. And that's not the deal. That's not, you know, that's not at all. I remember a couple of years before I started struggling really bad with addiction. I have some prayer journals and I was praying, God, help me to rely more on you.
Right. You had no idea. Yeah.
And for that was way different than anything. I thought like, just, you know, I don't know what I was thinking, but he sure did. Right. But it wasn't anything that I would have come up with. But I think that's this reality that his plans are way better than ours. Right.
I mean, if you look at it, even though the plans aren't what you expected, to see some of the things that have come out of the way that he directed us in those times, it's been truly amazing. I mean, the reality of seeing people that have met through the trauma or experience that we went through that never would have met, that never would have been involved in one another's lives. Like, people came together that had no idea who one another was, but they were passing each other on the way in and out the door as like they were taking care of the kids as I was coming home from the hospital or whatever was going, and friendships developed that never would have developed before. And yeah, just seeing some of the things that come out of that has been absolutely amazing. And we've had many a talks now of like, hey, knowing what we know now, would you go through it again? And it's hard. Man. Say, you know, no, I wouldn't go through it. Like, there's no way that we would choose. And it's like, actually, we would we would probably choose to go through it again. I don't know if, you know, if the outcome would have been different, I'd probably say like, no, like, why would I go through that again and allow that to happen? And, but where we're sitting, even though it was crazy, crazy hard, we'd probably go through it again, man. And that's weird for me to say, because I do not like going through stuff like this. I like my comfort.
Right.
I am a man that enjoys my comfort.
Same. Yeah. Give me routine. Right.
And yeah.
I'm good.
That's in that exactly space. Right.
Liberty Core Real Estate is your homegrown real estate broker. If you're looking to buy or sell real estate, whether personal or investment, Armando, aka Brian, and Megan Michaels' company is ready to serve you. With Command Center in Old Town Elkhorn and agents all throughout the metro, they are more than ready to guide and serve you in your next real estate endeavor. Whether your next move needs to happen now or in 5 years, call or text Armando at 402-770-2165 to get your questions answered. In a special offer for F3 Nation PAX members, Liberty Core will donate $250 to your sponsor of choosing for every closed transaction. Stop looking, start finding today with Liberty Core Real Estate.
What, just to kind of close the loop, so today your wife is obviously out of the hospital, home, things are better, but still kind of battling this autoimmune thing. Is that
battling
what
the autoimmune thing? She still has a open part, so she lost like all of the skin on her abdomen, and she still has they tried to do skin grafts and stuff like that, and skin grafts failed, and but they had to cut away a bunch because they thought that they were fighting an infection and it was all breaking down, so they had to cut it away, and they were able to get the majority of it to grow back through that hyperbaric oxygen treatment. So they did a bunch of that, but she still has a couple of wounds that are open. So she still sees wound care once or twice a month. And she still follows up with the infectious disease doctor and still sees a handful of other doctors. And she's home, but capacity is not what it used to be at all. And I think that that's something that's hard for her. I don't think I know it's really hard for her, because that's all she wants to do. She wants to be a wife and a mom.
Mm-hmm.
8 boys, like, you ask her about her kids and like nothing brings more joy to her life or a bigger smile to her face than being a mom, you know. I love that, but I feel for her that she can't function at the same capacity that she did, so she has to rely on the help of others, and you know, that's tough. As a mom, she wants to be able to do it all.
Long term, she will be able to, just as these wounds heal, and that's sort of the hope long term, or maybe there's still some uncertainty there.
There's still some uncertainty there of what this is going to look like. We've been finding out that weather has a big impact on how she does with managing pain and all that stuff, because it's an autoimmune that deals with inflammation and stuff like that. So yeah, it's just been a tough one, man.
Well, a tough one.
We'll keep praying for you guys. I am. This is a totally random question, but whose idea was it to have 8 kids? How did that?
Okay. So we had this conversation when we were first married. So we waited like 7 years to have kids, and we were out in the hot tub one night just talking about life and stuff like that after we were
talking
married.
In the hot tub,
yeah. Yeah. You know, back in the day when we used to be able to do stuff like that because we didn't have any interruptions. Nobody was coming up. Mom, dad. Yeah, we were just talking about family, and she's like, you know, how many kids you want to have? And I was being a smart ass, and I was like, you know, 8 to 12, that sounds about right, you know? Like, I think it'd be cool to have a big family. People don't have big families anymore. And it's just like, yeah, do that. And she looked at me, and she's like, really? Like, are you serious? Because she was, I don't know what. She wanted to have like a big family, but I think a big family at her was like 4, maybe 6 max. Then we had our first kid, and he's amazing. But his birth and going through his first year of life was a rude awakening for me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. About 2 or 3 months after, you know, he was born, I think I looked at her and I said, one's enough. Like, I don't know that I can. And so she always brings that up. She's like, you're the one that said that you wanted to have 8 kids. And I was like, it was a joke. So, but yeah, just, I mean, every time that they sat up, she was like, he's not a baby anymore. I need another baby.
Okay.
So she got kind of baby crazy there for a while, but.
Yeah. Lots of that every year, right?
It was for a while. We had like 16 months between all of them. So.
Okay.
It was never a surprise when I said, yeah, we're having another kid. Everybody's like, okay.
Go figure, right?
Yeah.
Well, I love it. And I'm also curious for you, when did faith become a part of your life, or what's been sort of your journey developing that relationship? Because something that I heard you say that was really cool is like the conversation you had with God in this moment of like, God, you're not doing what I want you to do, right? But like that relationship is there. And I hear that when I hear you talk. So how did you get to that point with your faith?
So I think that it goes back to a little bit with what we're talking about with F3, with that fellowship with other guys. One of my best friends, Ed, we switched churches, and Laura went to PA school with Ed's wife, and they invited us to a gospel community. And I was at a point in life where I was like, hey, like, I believe that God, like, he exists, like, I can the prayer thing and go through life, like, and I'm just comfortable, you know, never like truly read through the Bible or sat down and studied the Bible. Like, we would do Bible studies through our old church and whatnot and be involved with different groups, but it was surface level. Like, always let my wife lead anything that we were in, and she wanted to go do something. I was like, fine, let's go do it. And never wanted to be pushed, if that makes sense. So got to a point that she was like, hey, like, I don't know that I'm being challenged in the way you're growing, the way that I want to grow. Lindsay invited us to one of their GCs, and we went to GC, and like, Ed and I hit it off really well. But during GC, like, it was one of those things where people were talking about faith, and they were talking about different things, and they were being transparent and all of that stuff. And we walked away, and I was like, those people are nuts. Like, what are you doing talking about that stuff in front of other people, and what's going on in marriage, what's going on in life? And yeah, it took me, you know, probably a good couple of months to be like, okay, like, I feel comfortable in this room. But during that time, Ed was kind of just, he was pursuing just, hey, let's go hang out. Let's go do whatever. Hey, we've got to help this person move. Would you help me, like, help them move? Or just continual, like, reaching out of, hey, we're going to be doing this. You want to come along with us? Or I'm going to hang along, or to whatever, golfing or whatnot. Just kept on asking me to go do things with them. And like I said, I'm usually the guy that just sits back and I'm not going to make a huge effort. And so it means a lot to me when other guys are reaching out saying, hey, come along with us, do whatever. And, you know, he was the guy that everybody loved having conversations with. And he was the guy that everybody knew and everybody liked. And it was one of those things that it just, he really drew me in to what does it look like to have a relationship with God. And asked me to go on a men's retreat with him. And during that retreat, we were talking a lot about, hey, what's your relationship like with God the Father? You know, do you look at him the same way that you look at your earthly father? And there was just this moment of like, well, I don't even know if I do that. So there was just this point of like, I need to figure this out. I need to make this my own. And at that point, like, I just started digging in, started reading the Bible, started reading different things on faith and theology, and trying to get my hands wrapped around this thing that I called faith of my own that didn't really exist, to try to figure out, like, what does this look like? What does it look like to be called by God? What does it look like to follow God? What does that mean? Like, I need to change in life. What does that mean that I need to be doing differently? How do I need to be leading my family? You know, what's God calling me to do? I think it was probably at that point, it was like 2015 or so, slowly started making some of those changes. And I think that that's really where my faith journey, like I said, I believe, but I think that that's really kind of that turning point of like, hey, this is something like I feel God calling me to go deeper.
Yeah.
Lead my family well, to take ownership of my own life, to enter into some relationships where it's iron sharpening iron, and to have guys involved in my life that are willing to ask me and grow me and challenge me and hold me accountable for a lot of different stuff, you know. So
yeah, that's really cool. I love it. And I do, you know, I think I know you're leading your family well, right? And I you know, I remember a couple guys that had a chance to maybe bring you guys meals. It was maybe Khakis or somebody was like, you know, you're getting ready to enter this guy's house who you know is going through something. He's got 8 kids and you're expecting just total chaos. And he was like, we walked into Splinter's house and his kids were like, you know, just really well behaved. Everybody was just like doing what they were supposed to be doing. Lots of pleases and thank yous. And, you know, so I think it's really cool to just, you know, hear some of those examples that maybe you aren't even aware of, right? You get to see your kids all the time.
So. Yeah. Everybody always teases us that our kids follow along like ducks going into church. Like, what do you mean? Like, that's just the expectation at our house.
That's good. Yeah. You got to follow along or you might get left behind.
That's,
right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yes. You can form.
What, you know, thinking about like F3 and kind of this faith piece, I don't know if you would have any advice for guys or just anything you feel like you're seeing that, you know, you wish guys would maybe lean into a little bit more to help other guys get to where you are in your faith journey.
I think the one thing that I really would love for some guys to take away from F3 and to really like ownership wise when it comes to faith and F3 is to just like, what's it look like to ask good questions?
Yeah.
I think it's a lost art, to be honest with you. It's something that I struggled with for a long time that I think that guys just like, what does it look like to ask good questions? Not the surface level questions, not things that are just going to be talking about, you know, the surface level stuff, but what does it actually look like to ask good questions that can really lean into like, hey, how's marriage going? What's, you know, what are some of the things that you're struggling with? But phrasing the question in a way that's inviting that guys really want to enter in of like, hey, I'm struggling with this. Like, what does that look like to you guys? What's something that you guys actually struggle with? What have you ever been through something like this? Just trying to even draw guys into talking about things that are deeper. Because I think that that's one thing that as we've grown, I really would love to see guys take more ownership of like developing those deep relationships. Because right now it's really easy to get lost.
Yep.
I mean, I think I heard somebody say today, like we're up to like close to 3,000 guys. In F3 Omaha, and it's really easy to get lost. It's really easy to just show up for a beatdown now. Whereas in the past, there's no way you were showing up for a beatdown and somebody didn't notice that you were there, or you weren't going to be called out to finish a conversation that you started at coffee the other day. You know, it's really easy to just show up now and not have guys really leaning in, asking good questions. So
yeah.
I think that aspect of faith gets drawn out by good questions.
Heck yeah. I love it. And that's part of why, right? We're always trying to like keep starfishing until the numbers are at like a good level where you can have those conversations, right? I think it's definitely an important skill for guys to learn. Do you feel like F3, did you find any of that sort of stuff maybe like at QSource or I don't know, just curious other, or is that like just at coffee, somebody needs to have the courage to sort of say, hey, here's something that's on my mind. What do you guys think?
Both. To be honest with you, I think that it's just having the time and the capacity, because I know some guys, you know, they're trying to get in, to get out and get their workout in. I know some guys don't have the ability to do coffee after the workout because they got to get to, you know, get back home, get ready, get their kids dropped off to school or whatever it is. But yeah, a lot of those conversations sometimes during QSource in the beginning, I was doing some of that. I don't really do a whole lot of that anymore, but just cafeteria after. To be honest, it was really fun this winter, like when it got crazy cold or snowing and, you know, it's negative 20 degrees outside and you got guys showing up, but there's only like 6 or 7 of you there. And you go into coffee afterwards and it's like you can talk normal. You don't have to yell to have your conversation or whatnot because there's not 30, 40 guys in there having coffee. I just looked over, I don't even remember who it was. Oh, Safe Ride. I was like, you know what? This feels like the old days. You know, like you're just sitting here having a normal conversation at a normal level. So that was really fun. That's one of those that, I think that there's the opportunity to do that at cafeteria, but then also like pre-runs are great for conversation. As long as you're not sucking wind too bad, but you know.
Yeah, for sure. No, I love it. And I think that's a really good point. Just, you know, guys, somebody in the group has to have the courage to bring up something on your mind in a way that engages the other guys. I love that. You know, the other thing we talk about, like invigorating male community leadership, right? It's our mission. When you think about that, right, we try to get guys to do a VQ and give guys a chance to lead a site. So I would be curious, what was your experience like getting to take the flag and then talk us through sort of getting to hand it off and what that process was like?
Yeah, it was fun being offered and then being like, you know what? So if there's one thing that I don't need, it's anything else to boost my ego.
Right.
So until I can say that this isn't going to be like, I'm not going to take the flag to like boost my ego, like I'm going to say no. So it took me a year before I said yes to taking the flag for Battlefield. And I was just like, all right, like, I think I'm at a point in life where I have the capacity to do it, but also like, I'm not going to be doing it to like boost my own ego. You know, I just want to do it to like give back, to take some time in leadership and, you know, just pay back a little bit of what I've got out of F3. So that was really neat. And then having the ability to get to know some people through that process, getting to understand like, hey, there's a little more to some of these guys than maybe I thought, and then drawing some of that stuff out, talking through some of those things, and like really looking for the guy that I wanted to pass the flag off to and a challenge. And that process was really neat. I didn't think that I was going to enjoy that, but it was really fun to be able to say, hey, you know, what does it look like to take ownership? What does it look like to look for the next guy to lead this site? And what are some of the qualities that you want to see in that? I enjoyed the whole process.
Well, I think, you know, what I'm curious of is, you're thinking about being a site queue or even just in F3 Omaha in general, any advice that you would have for guys that are maybe taking over as a site queue or even just guys that are, you know, participating in F3.
I think that the only thing is just enjoy it. There's a reality that I think guys can put their identity, they can get their identity wrapped up in, I've got to do this, I want to be a part of this, I've got to lead one of these things. And like, if that's where you're at, then it's probably not the right time for you yet. Like, if you want to do this as a way to give back, or it's just a way to further kind of what F3 is meant to do for other men, like, I think you're in the perfect spot. If it's outside of that, and then like I was saying, if it's going to be an ego boost for you or whatnot, there's just a reality that being in the right mindset, like getting right before you take over a site, is probably something that really needs to happen. And then just rolling with it and enjoying it and realizing there's going to be guys that you don't get along with or that you think are just like, hey, your viewpoints are crazy. But it takes all kinds, man. And I think the reality is that if you can enjoy that part of it, you're going to love being a site queue. It's not, you know, it's not a ton of work if you don't make it out to be a ton of work. And it's just getting to enjoy the fellowship aspect and being able to show up and commit to showing up and realizing that if you can't make it, like, there's guys that are just going to step in and help. Like, there are guys that'll be there for you. But yeah, just enjoy the process. Enjoy giving back a little bit.
Yeah, that's great advice. I do think we've had some guys that have done it, right, as an ego boost. And I would say those are the guys that then after they hand off the flag, they fall off, because now what, right? So I think that would be, I think that's key, right? Is making sure it's really like out of service. I want to do this, because then it's easier to realize, like, when I'm not a site queue, I still get to be a part of and still get to serve, you know? So I think that's really great advice. Talk me through, you know, anything on your mind where we kind of like to wrap up with guys is like, current state, where do you need prayers? Where do you need support? Where do you need encouragement?
Yeah, that's a good question. Appreciate it. It's one of those things that, you know, I think we should be more mindful about talking to guys about, of like, hey, how can we step in? How can we help out? And I think the reality for us is just continued health and healing for my wife. There's a lot that still needs to happen there. I think emotionally, like, just for myself to be able to rely upon the Spirit for strength that I need to get through this, because that means, you know, in her situation, I get to pick up a lot of the stuff that she's not able to do, and she steps in where she can and probably beyond what she should be in a lot of spots. But I just need a lot more strength to be able to do the things that I'm doing now on top of, you know, running business and doing things like that. And then I think for my kids, because there's a reality that they've been through a year that most kids don't have to endure. Their mom was absent for a good portion of it. And I think that that can play out in a lot of different ways. So just that, A, they'd be able to process it, and B, that we would have a heart to listen to what is happening or see how it's manifesting so that we can address it and that we can walk through it. You know, it's going to take some long, deep conversations to get through what was this like for you. It's going to be different for the 14-year-old than it was for the 10-year-old, and different for the 4-year-old than it was for the 9-year-old. And
yeah.
So just realizing that they all experience this in their own unique and individual way, and not in a coddling way, but in a what does your future look like if you don't choose to deal with this? Like, how can we walk alongside you?
Mm-hmm.
Not how can we protect you from what's going to happen, but how can we walk alongside you and just, you know, in a positive way, support your processing of this?
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And you're spot on. I mean, what a, you know, like in a sense, right? It's like there's this period of time that they were almost like preparing to grieve, you know, this major loss. Or, and I love how you said it, that they each process it their own way, right? So it's just like having that conversation and being a good dad and just listening, giving them space to process out loud with you if they need to or not, right? Whatever they're, yeah, I love it.
And I would care well for my wife. I think that that's something I do not do well with, people being sick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just let's pull up the bootstraps. Let's, you know, this time, let's pull up our bootstraps and let's get to work here. And that does not, you know, it does not bode well for good relationship with the M when, like, she's brutally sick and she needs my help. Like, if I would just have, like, a generous and a kind heart, because, you know, people from the outside that say, hey, you're doing such a good job and everything, they get to see me at my best, you know?
Yeah.
They don't get to see me at the worst times where it's like dad's yelling and everybody's never doing a good enough job. And so that I could kind of step back for myself sometimes and just be there to support and help. So,
yeah. Yeah. It's funny because kind of like we were talking earlier with the God's plan is different than ours. He gives you this helper suitable for you. But what that means is that person's going to refine you and sort of make you, you know, better. So there's all of that element there too. That's just great to watch. And
definitely done that, my man.
Yeah. Well, this has been great. And I love getting to talk to you. I love when I get to see out in the gloom, and I'm just thrilled for other guys to hear your story. And I would encourage guys, if you see Splinter out there, I mean, you heard him say it, right? I mean, the guy, he likes to have deep conversations. He's, you know, ready, and I would say equipped to ask the hard questions, but also to answer in a vulnerable way when he's needing support. So just would encourage guys to lean in if they get a chance to be next to you. Appreciate the time today. We'll do a little name-orama just to wrap it up. I'll start us off here. Brandon Fleaherty, 39, The Plague.
Jason Cerrone, 42.
I think it was Tater that added that.
He did. Right? I mean, it's just me poking the bear. You're not allowed to shorten your name, but I'm going to poke the bear, bud.
I love it. Well, I appreciate you, man. Thanks for your time today.
All right. It was great seeing you again, Plague.
Thanks, brother.